Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Samachet Amud Bet, two lines from the bottom. Ibai Luhu, said the following question. Hazav ve'azava, shibadku atzman yom rishon, v'yom shmini, umatzu tohor. The Zav or Zava, who were keeping their shivinikim, they checked on the first day, and then checked on the eighth day. Until now, we discussed the situation in which they checked on the first day and the seventh day, and where the machloket tanaim, with regards to what the situation was in that circumstance. Rabbi Eliezer says that you get all the Shivanikim in that case. Rabbi Yeshua says you only get Yom Rishon and Yom Shvi'i. And Rabbi Kiva says you only get Yom Shvi'i. Those were their positions with regards to when you had checked on day 1 and day 7. Over here we're checking on day 1 and day 8. Bishar Yamim lo badku. And all the other remaining days they didn't do any checking. Le Rabbi Eliezer mahu. The question only relates to the position of Rabbi Eliezer. As Rashi notes, of course, for Rabbi Akiva, there's no question here. Because Rabbi Akiva, when you had one day and then seventh day, he said nothing counts except the seventh day. Then he's going to say the same thing over here. If you have the first day checked and the eighth day checked, everything in between is falling away. And even the first day falls away. The only thing you can do is count day 8 as the first of your Shivanikim. And that would be the same din, as he says, by 1 and 7. For Rabbi Yoshua, Rashi posits over here, and it will become clear in the Gemara, that Rabbi Yeshua believes that you can only count the Sirugim. You can only count out of order, which is Rabbi Yeshua said you count day 1 as 1, day 7 as day 2, and then you have to keep 5 more of the Shivanikim. So over here too, why wouldn't you say that day 1 is 1, day 8 is day number 2, and then 5 more days to get your Shivanikim? The reason being is that Rabbi Yeshua only states his opinion that you get to count the days, even though there is some interruption in the interim. That's only true if it's in the framework of the Shivanikim. When you have day 1 and day 7, they still fit into the same 7 days. So they could have been the potential for 7 days, and therefore you can aggregate them to make them day 1 and day 2. But if you have day 1 and then day 8, day 8 is in a new sequence. It's not in the same 7-day framework as the day 1. And therefore you can't count day 1 and then day 8 is day number 2 because it's already more than 7 days away from day number 1. So he agrees that you can aggregate the days when they're dispersed over 7 days, but once you cross over or you're more than 7 days, then you can't aggregate them anymore. So that's why Rashi says the question's not on Rabbi Yoshua. So the only one that leaves us is Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says that when you have day 1 and day 7, those earmark the beginning and the end, and therefore everything in between we consider to be tahor, because you have a cheskat tahara on day 1, cheskat tahara on day 7. So it's as if you counted 7 days. The question is, mau, tchilatan visofan be'inan. You need the beginning and the end. You need day 1 and day 7. V'hacha tchilatan ika sofan leka. But in the case where you have day 1 and day 8, you have the beginning, but you don't have the end. Because you have day 1, you don't have day 7, you have day 8 instead. Odilma tchilatan apopishen sofan. Or maybe, as long as you get the chezka tara from day 1, then it works, even though you didn't get day 7 at the end. So Amar Rav, hihi tchilatan, afopi shein sofan. So Rav says it's the exact same case as day 1 and day 7. Day 1 and day 8 functions the same way. And it's as if you got shivanikim, and that's because all you need is a start. As long as you start b'chezkat tahara, then there's an as-if counting that goes on from day 1, as if you counted shivanikim from day 1 and onward. And you have already completed your Shivat Nikim according to Rav. Rabbi Chanina Amar, Tchilatan V'Sofan Ve'ina. You need, in order to have that count of Shivat Nikim, you need the delineation of day 1 and day 7. You need a beginning and you need an end. Hacha Tchilatan Ika Sofan Leka. In the case of 1 and 7, you have day 1 and day 7. You have the bookends to make it into Shivat Nikim. On the other hand, with 1 and 8, you're missing the back end. You only have the front end with 1. But you don't have day number 7. Since you don't have day number 7, it won't count as Shivanikim. And Rabbi Eliezer would not agree in this case that you have Shivanikim. It's a machloket amoraim as to what Rabbi Eliezer's opinion would be by 1 and 8 as compared to his position by 1 and 7. So meitave, is that really true? V'shavin b'zav u'b'zava shabadku atzman yom rishon b'yom shmini. They both agree that by a zav and a zava that check themselves on the first day and the eighth day, umatz'u tahor, and they find themselves tahorim on those days, shein lehem elo shmini bilvad. Then you only get to count the eighth day. Man shavin. Who's agreeing to whom in this situation to say that 1 and 8 gets you only day number 8? Lav Rabbi Eliezer v'Rabbi Rabbi Yoshua. Isn't it Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua that they are agreeing? The Gemara says, lo. It's not Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua are agreeing that by day 1 and day 8, all you get is day 8. And then that would be supportive of Rabbi Hanina's contention against Rav's contention that you get the entirety of the Shivnikim. Lo, Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Akiva. It's Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Akiva that are agreeing to that point. Rabbi Akiva, l'shitato, who says that you only get the last day anyway. And Rabbi Yeshua, who says you count the Seirugin, over here says that you don't get day 1 as 1 and day 8 is number 2. This corroborates what we saw in Rashi before, that even Rabbi Yeshua believes that when it's day 1 and day 7, that you get to count day 1 as day number 1 and day 7 as day number 2. When it's 1 and 8, that doesn't work, and you only get day number 8, and you don't get day number 1. And therefore, his position would then be equivalent to that of Rabbi Akiva. Amar Rav Sheshet, Amar Rav Yirmi Ababa, Amar Rav, Nida, Shifrisha B'tahara, B'shlishi Shela, Sofrato, L'minyan Shiva Nikiim. So now we have a memra from Rav, that a nida, that on her third day is mafrish b'tahara, that she can count that towards her shiva nikiim. Now the statement is unintelligible because of what the Gemara is going to say right now. Nida sfira lamala. A nida doesn't require shiva nikiim. A nida is tmeya for 7 days, and then that's it. She goes to the mikveh. She doesn't require any counting, any shiva nikiim. So it can't be that we're speaking about a nida. Eleima zava. It has to be that we're speaking about a zava gidola who requires shiva nikiim. And the case is here, shifrisha b'tahara b'shlishishela, that she on the third day, meaning that a zava gidola is created by having sightings of dam during her 11 days of yamei ziva. So during that period of time, she has 3 consecutive days of sighting, she becomes a zava gidola. So in this instance, she saw 1 day of her yamei ziva. Then on the second day of your Yomei Ziva, then on the third day of your Yomei Ziva, she's now a Zava Gdola. On that third day, after sighting, she does a check, and now she has a Chezkat Hara. She doesn't find any Dam after the sighting on the third day. So now, what the statement of Rav is saying is, when she frees her B'tahara, when she does that check, and finds herself Torah, so far to the Minyan Zayin Nikiim, then you count it towards the Shivat Nikiim. You count it as the first day of your Shiva Nikiim, which means the last day where she had a sighting that made her into a Zava Gdola, half of that day, the beginning of that day, will count towards her becoming a Zava Gdola and she's Tmeya. The second half of the day where she is Tohora will be the first of her Zayin Nikiim, which is in essence the concept of Miksa Tayom Kikulo. Since I got a portion of the day B'tahara, I can count the whole day B'tahara. Now we have seen this earlier in the Masechta back on Daf Mamet Gimel, which is Amalei Rav Sheshe, the Rabbi Yirmi Ababa, Rav Kikudai Amra the Shmatte? You're gonna tell me that Rav holds like the Kutaim? The Kutaim, back on Daf Lamed Gimel Aleph, do exactly that. They have a problem with their count that we disagree with because they do exactly this. They count Shiva Nikiim based on Miksata Yom Kikulo on the first day. That the day where you became Tmeya, then they say if the remainder of the day is B'tahara, Miksata Yom Kikulo, and they start counting. So now you're telling me that Rav agrees with the Kutim that have this position. Damre, Yom Shaposeket Bo, Sofrato, the Minyan Zayin. On the day that you stop, meaning that the day that you have a Hefsek Tahara somewhere during that day, that you get to count that day towards your Shiva Nikiim and not have Shiva Nikiim, which means 7 whole days of Shiva Nikiim. Even the Chachamim agree that the last day, in terms of going to the Mikveh, Miksata Yom Kikulo. As long as you've entered into the 7th day, then you can go to the mikveh already on the 7th day. You have to wait for that day to be finished in order for that to be efficacious because you might have a sighting afterwards. But everybody agrees that you can have Miksata Yom Kikulo on the final day to go to the mikveh. But as far as the first day is concerned, counting the Shiva Nikiim, according to the Kutim, you're allowed to start on a day that you had a sighting of Dam. As long as you get some Hefsek Tahara, the second half of the day, if you get the remainder of that day B'tahara, then you're fine. We don't agree with that. We think that you need to get a full day of Tahara. The reason being, as we saw back in the Gemara in Lamed Gimel, is Rava undermines this position of Rami Bar Chama, who makes such a suggestion, by saying then you'll never have a case where a Baal Keri will undermine Shiva Nikiim. A Baal Keri, as we've said, is Tumat Yom, and a person who sees Keri during his Shiv Nikiim undermines one day of his Shiv Nikiim. That would never happen, because as long as he was a Baal Keri before the day was over, then he saw Keri, and then all you need to do is go to the mikveh, and you have the Bikset Yom Kikulo, the remainder of the day would be Bitara, and then it would count to one day your Shiv Nikiim. If you can count a Bikset Yom Kikulo Shiv Nikiim, then no matter when you saw your Keri, as long as it wasn't at the tail end of the day, then you would not be Oker a day. And therefore, the case in the Torah that says that Shechvat Zera is Oker one day of your Shiv Nikiim, you'd never have a manifestation of that except for some odd case where you saw right at the edge of Ben HaShemashot at the end of the day where there was no time left, that makes a day Yom Kikulo. So Rava says the fact that the Torah tells you that Shechvat Zera, Baal Keri, undermines one day of the Shiv Nikiim, shows you that we don't hold a Mikset HaYom Kikulo with regards to Tahara. Otherwise, that day would count as one of your Shiv Nikiim, and you would never be undermined by Shechvat Zera. So that was the disproof that we had back on Lamed Gimel, and that's what Rav Sheshit is saying to Amir Rehaba. How can you have this memra from Rav that says exactly what the Kutim are saying? Ella, what you have to say is, Kikam HaRav LeBar Mishlishi. That when he says you count the 7 days, the Shiv Nikiim, that's with the exception of the third day. Where it says, Bar Mishlishi, Pshita. Everybody thinks that. If you have 3 days, Be'tumah, and you become a Zavag Dola, then starting on the day after the third day, which is what we're saying now, Rav was saying, you start counting your Shiv Nikiim. Okay, that's pretty straightforward. You don't need me to tell you that you can start counting your Shiv Nikiim on the next day when you have no sighting at all. So what's the Chiddush here? Lo, Tzricha, Kigon, Delo Bodka, Ad Shvi'i. They never did any check. She didn't do a check on the first day of her Shiv Nikiim. Not second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth. Only on the seventh day that she did a check and she gets a Cheska Tara. Veshmune and Hatam, Tchilatan, Afu Pish Ein Sofan. Before we already established, according to Rav, in Rabbi Eliezer's position, that if you had a start, you did it on day one, and you didn't do it on day seven, it works. So now, Halcha Kamash Malan, Sofan Afu Pishein Tchilatan. He's telling you the exact opposite, which is, by the case where you only count day number seven, and not day number one, also in that case, you have Shiva Nikiim. So Rav says, in the position of Rabbi Eliezer, in both directions, Rabbi Lezer in a Mishnah only gives a case where you counted day one, or you checked day one, and you checked day seven. And then we said we can extrapolate between the two of them and say that you have a Cheskat Tahara. Rav comes along now and says that Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is that either one of those is sufficient. You don't need both of them. If you got day one, that we saw earlier, we argued on Rav Chanina, that when you did day one and day eight, it works because you had the beginning and you don't need the end. And now Rav is saying, based on the memra that we have in the name of Rav, which was unclear or unintelligible, but now we've fixed it to the point where now we have another chiddush from Rav, which is, even if you didn't count on day one, and you only counted day seven, then you would have Shiv Nikiim, according to Rabbi Eliezer. Now that's a huge chiddush, because how do you ever get to the Shiv Nikiim if you never had a Hefsek Tahara? If you never stopped, if you never had anything to delineate the difference between being Tmeah and Torah, how do you know when you started your Shiv Nikiim? So Rashi over here says, Umiu hafrasha b'tahara b'inan. He says it can't be that Rav thinks that you just go to the next day and you have Shiv Nikiim. He says you do have a hafrasha b'tahara, which means because you chuzkak by mayan patuach, if you already have a chazok of a mayan patuach, which she has here, she's seen 3 days in a row, Adam, that's a mayan patuach, and that's a chezkat mayan patuach. You can't eliminate that. Elayim kain, you do a check. And so what Rashi suggests happens over here, according to Rav, is on day one, she has a sighting. Day two, she has a sighting. Day three, she has a sighting during Yemei Ziva. She's now a Zavah Gdolah. In the middle of day three, she does a check. And she finds no more dam. That's a Hefsek Tahara. That makes it now that she switched over from Cheskat Tumah to Cheskat Tahara. But it doesn't do anything because it's the middle of your third day, and we don't say Mixadei Yom Kikulo, and therefore it doesn't help you. What it does help you for is the next day, day one of your Shiv Nikiim, if you don't do a check, that Hefsek Tahara from yesterday will delineate that you're in the days of Tahara, and you don't need a check on day one. And that's what Rav's Chiddush is. Rav's Chiddush is that the Hefsek Tahara from yesterday is enough to trigger the fact that you started your Shiv Nikiim. As long as you check then on day seven to delineate the other end of it, you're fine. Even though you never checked on day one of Yeshiva Nikiim. That's the way Rashi explains it, but that's important because otherwise, how do you have a scenario where you never had a Hafsek Tara? How do you know where to change over where the Yeshiva Nikiim began? So that's what Rashi asked for this. And the Gemara says, Tema, I would have thought with regards to Rabbi Eliezer's position, it makes sense to say that if you day one you did a check and it was Bitara, then you can assume every subsequent day is Bitara unless proven otherwise. That I would have understood. Dukminu achazkayu, because you would keep the status quo intact. And now the status quo, based on your check on day one, is Tara. Then you'll continue as if you have Shivniki and Bitara. Aval sufan, afopishen tchilatan, alo. But in a case where you never established a day one, then day seven may not have been sufficient, because you never established a chazkat Tara, kamash malon, that we do. Even without or even absent the check on day one, you still start your Shiva Nikiim, and you can count your 7 days beginning with that day, and even though you only checked on day number seven. And even though in the Mishnah it mentions one and seven, you could argue that's not because of Rabbi Eliezer, but because of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Akiva. So you can't bring any evidence from the Mishnah that Rabbi Eliezer specifically requires one and seven, or specifically requires one, because the numbers of one and seven are maybe relevant because of the other opinions that argue on him. So that's the Chiddush of Rav over here. Rav is now parsing Rabbi Eliezer's position into two pieces, saying that you don't need both Tchilatan and Sofan, you need either or. You need either Tchilatan or Sofan, day one or day seven. Either one is sufficient to get you your Shiva Nikiim, even though you didn't check any of the other days. The Gemara challenges that and says, Zini, is that really true? Va'akiyata Ravin. When Ravin came, Amar, Meitiv Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Chinina. Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Chinina challenged Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi from Toa, from the case of Toa. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says that when a woman miscarries, she brings a korban, vadai, because the majority, or ala rov, or the chazaka is, that when a woman miscarries, she miscarries something that is an entity that would be mechayev her in a korban. So even though there's a chance that she was hipila ruach, that she gave birth to something that wasn't an entity that would make her chayev in a korban, but a woman who is known to be pregnant and then miscarries and doesn't know what she miscarried, and also doesn't know whether what she miscarried was chayev in a korban, Yeshua ben Levi says, ala rov. Pregnancies that terminate in something that would make you chayav in a korban. We challenged that from the case of To'ah. You remember that from all the cases in the Gemara back on Daf Chavtet, where we discussed this. We're going to get into it in detail again now. But back on Chavtet, we had the case of To'ah, which is a woman who comes before us. She left pregnant, comes back not pregnant, and she has no clue what happened in between. Over there, in the case of To'ah, we don't give her Yemei Tohar. We don't give her Yemei Tohar from having a pregnancy. According to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, if a woman miscarries, in all likelihood she miscarried either a male or a female, and she should be entitled to certain days of Yemei Tohar, at minimum 33 days of Yemei Tohar for a male, and if you're going to be Machmir for 14 days of Tumah of a female, then it would be 40 minus 14, or at least 26 days of Tahara. And Rabin says about that, Lo Yadana Maiti Yuftei. I don't know why his question's even a question. And that is because the reason she doesn't get Yemei Tara is not because we don't give her Yemei Tara. It's because we don't know when she miscarried. She could have miscarried already 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago. If that's the case, then we have no idea whether she's still in her Yemei Tohar. That's why she doesn't get Yemei Tohar. Not because she's not maybe entitled to them, but because they're elapsed already. And therefore, that's why she doesn't get Yemei Tohar. The Kaimalon. And now the Gemara is going to go through what we established back there by Toah. If you remember, once she shows up in front of us, she has 3 weeks of no sighting of Dam. Then after that, she starts having sightings of Dam every other week. She'll have 1 week of sighting all that week, and then 1 week when she has no sighting for the next 10 weeks. So then the Gemara back there discussed how many times this woman needs to go to the mikveh. It was a machloket, Beit Shammai, who says you go 95 tefilot. Beit Hillel, who says 35 tefilot. And Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda said one tefillah is sufficient for the entire thing at the end. So now, Nekaimalon. So in that scenario, we said, Shvua kama da'atiya lekaman. On the first week that she's with us, Belelot matbininla. She goes to the mikveh every night. Beyomama lo matbininla. But during the day, she doesn't go to the mikveh. She goes to the mikveh at night because we have a safek as to whether these are the end of her Yumei Tumah. Yumei Tumah function like a nida. Just like by nida, you have 7 days of Tumah, and then right afterwards you go to the mikveh. So too over here, we're going to make her go to the mikveh every night, because maybe this is the end of her Yumei Tumah. Whether it's for Zachar or Nekeva, it would be the end of her Yumei Tumah, she goes at night. But we don't make her go to the mikveh during the day. You would go to the mikveh during the day if you thought you were a Yoledet Bezov, and now she had Shivanikiyim, and these are the end of her Shivanikiyim, and she can go to the mikveh during the day, because we said at the end, Mikset the Yom Kukulo allows you to go to the mikveh on the seventh day. The fact that we don't make you go to the mikveh during the day shows you we're not worried about this being the end of her Shivanikiyim. Why not? Why can't it be that she was a Zavagdola? 7 days already elapsed of Shivanikiyim, and the seventh day of her Shivanikiyim falls out on any day during that first week, and it's possible that she should go to the mikveh because it's the end of her Shivanikiyim. And that Gemara is discussing the fact that it's Tevila B'zmana Mitzvah. Going to the mikveh on time is a mitzvah, and therefore we're trying to hit the right time where she went goes to the mikveh. Why don't we consider that possibility? If you think that you don't require Shivanikiyim to be counted explicitly, how explicit is a good question. According to the Shla, it means that the woman has to actually count them verbally out loud. According to most poskim, she just needs to be aware and know that she's counting her Shivanikiyim and know which day of her Shivanikiyim she's in. Then, v'yomama naminat v'leinu. Then why doesn't she go to the mikveh during the day? Dilma yoledet zachar bezovi. Maybe she gave birth to a zachar, which would make it 7 days of Tumah, and then Shivanikiyim. Va'avdala sipurim. And now she's through her Shivanikiyim. She's ending the Shivanikiyim. Elav shmamina. So what there you see, and we discuss this back on Daf Kotet, being at Sfurim Bifanenu, we need to have the count of Shivanikiyim be done in front of us. In front of us means that we have to be aware that you're counting Shivanikiyim. Shivanikiyim don't just happen. They actually have to be enumerated. They have to be counted. And that's why we don't worry about her having to go to the mikveh in the first week during the day. It's because she never enumerated the Shivanikiyim. Because when she comes before us, she says, I have no idea what happened. If she has no idea what happened, then she clearly didn't count her Shivanikiyim. And we don't automatically assume that Shivanikiyim happened just because she had some sort of hefsek tara during the period of time that she was away. And therefore, she should be entitled to Shivanikiyim as if they were counted. You need to count them with intent, with awareness to the fact that these are the Shivanikiyim. And that would go against what Rav is saying over here, that you can just show up on the seventh day, do a bedikah, and that counts as your Shivanikiyim, even though the days before you never did any bedikah, and you never delineated them or made it clear that those are your Shivanikiyim, because we need Spurim Bifaneinu. Mar says, V'lav mi'u kimna, didn't we establish back on Daf Chavtet, Daf Lamed, Ki Rabbi Akiva, that sugya there is like Rabbi Akiva, Damar Binat Spurim Lifaneinu, that you need Spurim Lifaneinu. So you're right, it's a very good question. Problem is, it has nothing to do with what we're discussing here. Rav saying his position in the view of Rabbi Eliezer, and you're bringing me something that is a brayta alibi de Rabbi Akiva. And we know that Rabbi Akiva requires Spurim Lifaneinu, but Rabbi Eliezer doesn't necessarily require Spurim Lifaneinu, and Rav saying his position in that view of Rabbi Eliezer, not in that view of Rabbi Akiva. So you're right, that sugya back on Chavtet of Toah is a case of Svurim Lifaneinu, but that's because it's Rabbi Akiva. I'm saying this in the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer, and therefore it's not a question on my position. Umana Tamra de la Rabbanan lo bein et Svurim Lifaneinu. And how can I show you, or how can I prove to you the fact that the Rabbanan don't require Svurim Lifaneinu? Meaning that is the Shita of Rabbi Akiva, it's not the Shita of the other Tanaim, because that's basically what Rav is suggesting over here, that you don't need Svurim Lifaneinu, and he's suggesting it in the position of Rabbi Eliezer. So how can I show you that there is such a distinction, and not everybody agrees with that position of Rabbi Akiva? That is because, the Tanya, we have a Braita, and now this Braita is complicated again, similar to the case of To'ah that we saw back on the Chavtet. I sent out yesterday charts that you can use to help you go through these different cases. And you can find them on the website at swdaf.com. The Tanya, Toa, Sha'amra. We have a woman who, again, is mistaken. Mistaken meaning that she doesn't know all the details of her circumstances. That says, Yom Echad Tamei Raiti. I saw Tuma for one day. I did have a sighting, and I had a sighting for one day. So she knows the information that she had a sighting for one day. She has no recollection as to which day that was. So then, Matvilin Ota Tet Vilot Zayin Lenida betray the Ziva. Then we ask her to go to the mikveh 9 times, 7 of them because of the fact that she might be at the end of her nida, and 2 of them because she might be at the end of her ziva. That is because we have 2 possibilities as to what's happening here when she had tuma one day. One possibility is that she is a nida. She had a sighting one day, and she now needs 7 days of tuma. We have no idea when that sighting was. It could have been the day before she came before us. Could have been 2 days before, 3 days before, 4 days before. Could have been any number of days before. It also could have been on the day she came before us, before she came to us. That could have been when she cited it. So that means in terms of Nida, she needs to go to the mikveh every night subsequent to the day that she comes before us. On the day that she stands before us, that night, she goes to the mikveh, because that might be the end of her 7 days of Nida, meaning that she saw it 6 days ago. This was the 7th day, and now she has to go to the mikveh night. The subsequent day, she also goes to the mikveh night, because maybe, again, she only saw it 5 days prior to coming before us, and then she's 7th day turns out to be the next day, and so on and so forth. It could be any one of the 7 days, including the day she came before us, and therefore every night subsequent to the day she came before us, we will tell her to go to the mikveh to become Torah from a nidah. And that means that you have 7 nights that she needs to go to the mikveh, and that's the composition of these tet vilot. 7 of them are linida. Then you also have to go to the mikveh twice for ziva. And that is because if she had sighting for one day, maybe she wasn't during her yamei nida, she was during her yamei ziva. And when you have a sighting during yamei ziva, a sighting for one day is shomeret yom keneged yom. Now the possibility is that she saw it yesterday before she came before us. That means that the day she came before us, she's actually the day of her Shomer Yom Keneged Yom, and she needs to go to the mikveh immediately after she comes before us. Because that could be the Shomer Yom Keneged Yom for the day before. Or, on the day she came before us, she sighted in the morning, and then she came to us, then her Shomer Yom Keneged Yom is the subsequent day. And therefore, the next day during the day, she will go to the mikveh, because Shomer Yom Keneged Yom is a Zavah Ktana, and a Zavah goes to the mikveh during the day. So she would go the subsequent day to the mikveh for ziva. So because of those 2 possibilities, she has to go to the mikveh twice during the day. 7 times at night because of the 7 possibilities of when she could have been a nida or started being a nida. And then twice during the day because of the possibility that she's a shomer yom keneged yom. And that's the maximum number of tefillot that could be the safek here. And that's why she goes to the mikveh 9 times. And from here you can't prove anything about sfurim lefaneinu because here we're discussing a zavak tana. Maybe by shomer yom keneged yom, you don't need sforim lefaneinu, but by a zavak gdola, you do, and therefore we have to continue through the braita till we reach the issues of zavak gdola in order to prove that you don't need sforim lefaneinu. Rashi brings over here the possibility of her coming at nighttime. What happens if she shows up in front of us at night? So Rashi says if she comes at night, then there are 10 tvilot. 8 of those are for Nida, and 2 of them are for Ziva. So when she comes at night, it adds an additional dynamic. As far as the Ziva, they're the same again. Because if she saw the night before she came to us, then she needs to go to the mikveh as a Shomer Yom Keneged Yom on the subsequent day. On the other hand, if she sees the night that she came before us, before she came before us, she had a sighting, then the next day she's Tmeah, you'll need a day afterwards to be Shomer Yom Keneged Yom. Those are your 2 tvilot for Yemei Ziva. Then for Nida, you have to add an additional day here. Because the possibility is that she came before us at night, and she said she sighted once. So the possibility is you could have sighted any one of the previous 7 days, and that means that she could have been chayevet to go to the mikveh tonight. Because it could have been that she saw in the days prior to coming here, and on the day before she came before us, that's her 7th day of Nida. The night she reads for us is the day she should go to the mikveh. So she goes to the mikveh that night. The other possibility, which is the other extreme, is that she sighted before she came before us. Which means the next morning is the first day of her 7 days of Tumah. So therefore she'll go to the mikveh the night she comes before us. and then she will go the subsequent 7 nights, she'll go to the mikveh, to be a total of 8 nights that she goes to the mikveh. So as Rashi points out, so if she came to us at nighttime, you would add an additional tevilah because of that night, because it's possible that that night is the end of her nida. It's also possible that night is the beginning of her nida. So that adds an additional day of going to the mikveh, and therefore you would go to the mikveh 10 times instead of 9 times, 8 for nida and 2 for ziva. Now we come on to an additional case, which the Gemara says, ben hashmashot tamei raiti. If she comes and says that I had a sighting ben hashmashot, matbina nota yudalef tefilot. Then she has to go to the mikveh 11 times. Gemara says yudalef mavitayu. Why would she have to go to the mikveh 11 times? So as Rashi pointed out, if she came to us during the day, she'd have 9 tefilot. If she came to us at night, she would go 10 tefilot. How could it be that she has a sighting ben hashmashot that it would be any worse than one of those two? It is either a daytime sighting or a nighttime sighting. We just don't know which of the two it is. And therefore, you could either be 9 tefilot or 10 tefilot. How do you get to 11 tefilot if the maximum you would get if you came during the day is 9, and the maximum if you came at night is 10? So then how do you get to 11? So that's why the Gemara is saying, why would you need 11? It's a case where not only did she have a sighting ben hashmashot, she also shows up in front of us ben hashmashot. So now you have two aspects of ben hashmashot. One is that she says, I had a sighting ben hashmashot, I just don't know which ben hashmashot it was. And she's standing before us at ben hashmashot asking us what to do. So that case you have, havian tamnei lenida. She goes 8 times to the mikveh for nida, and tlat leziva, and 3 times for ziva. So the truth is, it's not much different than the case where she came before us at nighttime. When she came before us at nighttime, we said 8 for nida, because the possibility that this night is either the post the 7 days of Yemei Nida, or the possibility that this is the first day of her Yemei Nida, and therefore she has to go to the mikveh each one of the subsequent nights, because it could be the end of the 7 days of her Tumah from Nida, and there she does that all the way out to 8 days. That's similar to the case which she saw at night. But by Ziv'ah, we actually get an additional day. And that's because she cited Ben Hashmashot, and is showing up to us Ben Hashmashot. So there's a possibility that she saw yesterday Ben Hashmashot, and if Ben Hashmashot is daytime, that means that she saw on the previous day. And that means when she's showing up in front of us in Ben Hashmashot, if she goes to the mikveh now, that will be her Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom. Because just like the Ben Hashmashot on the day before was daytime, and therefore it's considered to be a daytime sighting, so do now when she goes to the mikveh Ben Hashmashot, that will be a daytime tefillah, and she would have done Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom. Or the possibility is when she saw yesterday Ben Hashmashot is really night. Well, if it's night already, then she's her Tmeyah today, and that the mikveh going to the mikveh Ben Hashmashot didn't help her. So she needs to go to the mikveh the next day as a Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom. So you have to do it on the day she shows up, Ben Hashmashot, she'll go to the mikveh. And the subsequent day she'll go to the mikveh because one of those 2 days could be the Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom. Then in addition to that, the possibility is on the night she showed up before us, meaning the Ben Hashmashot she showed up before us, she might have seen during that Ben Hashmashot, and now it's Ben Hashmashot still, and she's standing in front of us. Well, if that's the case, it's possible she sighted when it's already night tonight, because it's already far enough along in Ben Hashmashot, or Ben Hashmashot is considered to be night, and she had a sighting tonight. If that's the case, then the next day is Tmeah. She'll have to wait the subsequent day afterwards, Bitara, and she'll have a Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom. So there'll be an additional day of Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom, where she goes to the mikveh. She'll go to the mikveh immediately when she shows up in front of us. She'll go the next day, and the subsequent day. And that's why you have 3 times for Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom. So you've added in an additional time for the mikveh. So as Rashi noted, if she shows up at night in front of us, you go to the mikveh 10 times. So then, Ben Hashmashot adds on 1 additional safek, which is an additional tefillah for Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom. At the moment she shows up in front of us, we make her the mikveh immediately because of the possibility that she's a Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom. Ben Hashmashot would count as daytime, and she would get tefillah bizmana. So that's the answer to that 11. Because then we have the case of Lo Ra'iti Kol Ikar. She says, I didn't see at all. Matbino lata tetvav tevilot. We make her go to the mikveh 15 times. Amarava, hai dina, to lo dina. this din that she goes 15 times, which is clearly not the right din, Dine Begalche. They have this din in a place called Galche, which the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which has this case brought in it, and it's spoken about the din of stone, which are all these immoral, unfair practices that were conducted in stone. So it seems to be, as Rashi says, Galche is the name of a city. So if you put those two together, then it Galche was an area by stone Valmora, where they acted like you would expect the people of stone to act, which is that they have these rules, these laws, and these dinim that are immoral and unfair. For instance, Ditle Torah, person who owns a shore, Lire Chad Yoma, he in the rotation has to do one day of grazing, meaning that everybody in the city gives him their shvarim, and he grazes them for one day. And then the next day, another party from that group of shore owners, he takes all the shvarim. So it's a partnership in which they take turns at grazing the shvarim. The unfair part is, Ditle Torah, someone doesn't own a shore, Lire Tre Yoma. He has to go out and graze them for 2 days. So if you live in the city and you own a shore, all you have to do to participate in the laws of the city is that you do one day in the rotation where you take care of them. If you don't own a shore, then you're forced to do 2 days of the rotation, even though you have no benefit from it. The person who owns the shore, he has to graze the shore anyway, so it's not a big deal for him to take the other shvarim along with this shore. The person who doesn't have any shore at all, he's no interest in this whole partnership because he doesn't need to graze. Yet the law is in that city that if you don't own a shore, you have to contribute 2 days to this partnership where you go out and graze the shvarim, which is clearly unfair and immoral. Itrame lehu yitoma bar hamilata. They had a resident of the city who was an orphan, the son of a widow. Yavule tore. They gave him the shvarim to watch. Like they say, the rules are, if you don't own a shore, you go out and you have to work 2 days in the partnership rotation to graze the shvarim, and that's what he was doing. Azal nachsinu. He went ahead and he shechted all the shvarim that they gave to him. Amar lehu. And he says to them, Ditle Torah l'shkod chad mashka. If you own a shore, then you get one hide. Ditle Torah, if you don't own a shore, l'shkod trei mashke. Then you get two hides from this. Amru lei, my hide, the kamart. What is that? That's crazy. Why would you who own no shvarim get any hides? And why we who own the shvarim, do we only get one hide? So Amar lo, sof dina ki tchilat dina. The end of the din should be no different than the beginning of the din. Tchilat dina lav man delele odif. Just like in the beginning of the din, someone who didn't own a shore was forced to do double the work. They had to do the work of grazing the animals for 2 days, even though they didn't own anything. Sof dina nami. So too in the back end, it should be the same thing. Mandalate odif. So too in the back end, the one who is without ownership of a shore, he gets the benefit, and therefore he gets two hides for every one hide the people who own the shvarim get. And so he basically turned the tables on them and forced them into a position where their unfair or immoral act worked in his favor now, because you said before, I get the short end of the stick because I don't own a shore. Okay. Then in this situation, I'll get that same short end of the stick, which turns out to be in my favor, and things will work out. So that is an expression or an idiom about the unfairness of the people of Stone and how it was turned on them. Hachanami, here too. Mahi chedama re'iti. If she says, I know for certain I saw, sagila ibitesha tvilot, ibiudalot tvilot, somewhere between 9 and 11 tvilot are sufficient to get tvilot bizmana. If she comes to us during the day and says, I saw once, then we say that she has to go to the mikveh 9 times. She comes before us at night and says that I had a sighting 1 time, we say she has to go to the mikveh 10 times. She comes benesh mashot and said, I saw benesh mashot, she goes 11 times. So 11 is the maximum if she said, I did see something. Heichet de kamra'i lo ra'iti. Now she comes before us and says, I saw nothing. Baye chameshes rei tvilot? How could it be possible that she could require 15 tvilot? She tells us she saw something, the maximum is 11. Or that it's anywhere between 9 and 11 that is required. Then how could it be when she says, I saw nothing, that she has to go to the mikveh 15 times? Ela'ema hachi. You have to reword that part of the braita. And this is the case. Re'iti, ve'inu yodea kama re'iti. I saw, and I have no idea how many days I saw. And number two is, ibime nida re'iti, obime ziva re'iti. I also don't know if I saw it during my yime nida, or if I saw it during my yime ziva. In that case, matbilin ota tetvav tvilot. She has to go to the mikveh 15 times. If she's atai lekaman biyomama, if she comes before us during the day, yavin not shave the nida. She has to go to the mikvah 7 times for nida, vitame leziva, and 8 times for her ziva, for the possibility of ziva. Once again, with regards to nida, it's easy to understand why she has to go 7 times to the mikveh for nida, because she's now standing in front of us, and she says, I had a sighting of dam. I don't know when I saw it. I don't know when it was my nida or my ziva, and I don't know how long the duration of that was. So now, again, the possibility is on the day that she showed up before us, she's on her 7th day of Yemei Nida. And so that night she goes to the mikveh in case this is the 7th day of your Nida. For the 6 subsequent days, she will also go at night for the mikveh, because this could be the 6th day when she shows up in front of us, the 5th day, the 4th day, the 3rd day, or it could be the 1st day of your Yemei Nida, because maybe she sighted on that day right before she showed up before us, and that was the 1st day of Yemei Nida. And the 7th day will be 6 days later, and therefore she goes that night to the mikveh, and the subsequent 6 days at night to the mikveh, to incorporate the possibility that any one of those days is the termination of her 7 days of nida. And remember, in all these cases, we're thinking tevilah b'zman as a mitzvah, and therefore we're trying to get her to the mikveh on time when she's supposed to go to the mikveh. Now, we also then have to incorporate the problem of yemei ziva, which is the 8 days of ziva. 2 of those days will be similar to what we said in the previous case, which is the first 2 days, the day that she comes to us, because that might be the Shomer Yom Keneged Yom for a sighting the day before, and the subsequent day she goes to the mikveh because she might have sighted right before she came before us, and tomorrow is the Shomer Yom Keneged Yom. So those are 2 days that she has to go for sure to the mikveh during the day because of Shomer Yom Keneged Yom of a Zavak Tana. The other possibility is that she saw 3 days in a row. If she saw 3 days in a row, then she needs Shiva Nikiim, and she needs to go to the mikveh on her 7th day. Now, some of those possibilities are already captured by what we already had in the Shomer Yom Keneged Yom cases. So there will be a possibility of Shiva Nikiim being any one of the days, including the days she shows up in front of us, which would be both for a Zavak Tana, or the possibility that's the end of her Shiva Nikiim, and the day afterwards could also be that she's a Zavak Tana because she saw in the morning before she came before us, during Yemei Ziva, she Shomer Yom Keneged Yom the next day and goes to the mikveh. It also, both of those days also could be the end of her Shiva Nikiim. If she had sightings of Dam for 3 days in a row prior to coming before us, and her Shiva Nikiim terminate either on the day she shows up in front of us, or the day after, she would require going to the mikveh. But she's already going to the mikveh today because she might be a Shomer Yom Keneged Yom. So those first 2 possibilities overlap, and those are 2 of the days she goes to the mikveh for Ziva. There are additional 6 times she needs to go to the mikveh afterwards for the possibility that any one of the days that come afterwards are the termination of her Shiva Nikiim. She saw 3 days some time before. She came before us 5 days before, 4 days before, 3 days before, 2 days before, even 1 day before. Then her Shiva Nikiim will come out along those lines. Or the last possibility is on the morning she came before us, she had a sighting of Dam. And that was the 3rd day of her Yemei Ziva. That means for the subsequent 7 days, those are going to be her Shiva Nikiim. And those Shiva Nikiim, at the end of that, on the 7th day, she needs to go to the mikveh. So you have here the possibility of any 8 days, including the day she shows up in front of us, that required her to go to the mikveh during the day. Again, first 2 days, the day she shows up, the next day are, because she could be a Zavak Tana, Shomer Yom Keneged Yom, or she could be a Zavak Dola, and these are the termination of her Shiva Nikiim. And then the subsequent 6 days, you would go to the mikveh every day after that because that's possibly the last day of her Shiva Nikiim, with the last day being the day that she showed up in front of us. She saw Dam that morning, and that was her 3rd day of Yemei Ziva, and then she has now count Shiva Nikiim starting on the next day to go to her end of her Shiva Nikiim, and that means for the 8th day after she showed up to us, she will go to the mikveh on that 8th day during the day because that was the last day of her Shiva Nikiim. So that's how you get to that possibility that there is 15 tefillot, 7 for nida, and 8 for ziva. The Gemara continues and says, "Veleluta, if she shows up at night, yabinana tamne the nida veshev the ziva." So she gets 8 days for nida and 7 days for ziva. Now the 8 days of nida is no different than what we saw before when she comes and says, "I had 1 day of sighting." And we said if she shows up at night, then she has to do 8 days for Nida. The reason being is that the night she showed up might be already the night after her 7 days of Nida. So she goes to the mikvah immediately when she comes before us. It also might be that the night she showed up in front of us, before she came to us, she had a sighting of Dam. And that was the first day of her 7 days of Nida. And therefore, she'll have to count 7 days of Nida. And subsequent to those 7 days, go to the mikveh, which will be on the eighth night. After she comes in front of us, she needs to go to the mikveh. So that's understood from what we saw before. And then she needs to do 7 days of Ziva. Gemara says, 7 days of Ziva? Ziva tam na baye. They need 8 days of Ziva. Ela idi vi idi. Both cases of whether she showed up during the day or whether she showed up at night, shev l'nida v'tam l'ziva. 7 days for nida, 8 days for ziva. Gemara says that's not right. B'leluta tam l'nida boy. As we just discussed and we saw beforehand, when you come at night, you need to go to the mikveh 8 times for nida at night. So ziva de psikale. So by ziva, where it's clear, to loshna ki'atya l'kaman b'yomama. Lo shnaki atel kaman melelia makes no difference whether you came during the day or you came at night. Chashiv la, it counted it, which is the 8 days. No matter whether she comes at night or whether she comes during the day, there you require 8 days of ziva. So that was counted in the 15 that we said before. 8 for sure. But when it comes to nida, the lo psikale, by nida it's not clear. If she comes before us at night, then you need 8. If she comes during the day, she doesn't need 8. She only needs 7. We don't count it. So the reason it says that if she comes before us and says, I had sightings, I had multiple sightings, I have no idea when I had those sightings. If she shows up, we said that's 15 to be low. Mar says, well, when does she show up that you have 15 to be low? If she showed up during the day, Ein ochanami, you would have 15 to be loth, because you'd have 7 for nida, 8 for ziva. She shows up at night, that's not true. At night, she'll need 8 for nida, and 8 for ziva, it'd be 16. Gemara says, you're right, you would need 16 in that case, but what the Gemara did was take the psikole, the thing that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true is, if she comes before us with such a claim, then she has to go to mikveh at least 15 times. Because if she came during the day, it would be 15, she came at night, it's 16. So the common denominator between them is 15. So I know for sure she needs to go 15. But it is true, if she comes at night, she would actually have to go 16 times. And that's because, besides the 8 for ziva, which are common between the two cases, she also has to go one additional time for nida, because of the possibility that at night, this was the termination of her 7 days of nida, and she should go right away. Or she saw right before she came before us, and this was the first of her 7 days of nida, and similar to the case that we brought on the previous Samud, that when she comes before us at night, we said there are 8 days of Nida and 2 days of Ziva. Over here it would be 8 days of Nida and 8 days of Ziva. Isakadatko, Sfurim Lifanenu Beninan. All this is brought down to tell us that if you need Sfurim Lifanenu Beninan, Kohani Tfilot Lomali. Why do you need all these Tfilot? The only reason you're bringing these Tfilot is because of the possibility that she's terminating her Nida, or because she's terminating her Shivanikim. And all of these cases of terminating her Shiv Nikim, it's clear that the count started before she ever showed up in front of us. Because otherwise, if you need Sfurim Lefanenu, then you just start from the day she shows up and you start counting Shiv Nikim. The first time she would need to go to the mikveh is 7 days later. Similar to the case back on Chavtet of To'ah, where we said according to Rabbi Kiva, since you need Sfurim Lefanenu, the first week she doesn't need to go to the mikveh during the day. Only after that first week do we say she possibly now has Shiv Nikim, and she has to start going to the mikveh during the day. So over here, in these cases, we're making her going to the mikveh during the day. From day one, she shows up in front of us. And if you believe, Sfurim Lefanenu Beinan, Kohani Tfilo Lomali, why do you need any of these Tfilot? Tispor Zayin, Vahadar Tikbal, let her count Shiv Nikim in front of us, and then go to the mikveh. Elav Shmamino Rabbononi. It must be that this Braita is authored by the Rabbonon, who disagree with Rabbi Akiva. Damei Lo Beinan, Sfurim Lefanenu. They don't require Sfurim Lefanenu. Based on the fact that they don't require Sfurim Lefanenu, then Rav has his position that when you don't have a check on the first day, but you do have a check on the seventh day, that that is sufficient. Of course, with the corollary of what Rashi said, she had a Hefsek Tara on the last day of her sighting of Dam during her Yemei Ziva. She had a Hefsek Tara. The next day she doesn't do any checks. She's not even focused on the Shivanikim. Shows up on the seventh day, does a check, and says, I have Shivanikim. That works, according to Rav, at least in the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer. The Tosfot HaRosh is more sanguine about the issue of Hefsek Tara. He says the whole issue of this Tevila Bizmana Mitzvah, and therefore we would tell her to go to the mikveh anyway, even without Hefsek Tara, assuming Hefsek Tara is Midrabanan. Or if you think of Hefsek Tara is Midoraita, still there's a possibility she did it and she doesn't remember. Just like she doesn't remember other information, maybe she doesn't remember the Hefsek Tara. So we will assume she did a Hefsek Tara, even though we have no idea whether she did or didn't, and that's why she'll go to the mikveh, even though we're not certain there was a Hefsek Tara here. Amalei Rav Acha, Breda Rav Yosef, Rav Ashi, Lav Tirutzei Kamitartzina La. Wait a minute. You are re-engineering this Breita. The Breita didn't make so much sense in each of the cases that were brought down. In each of these cases, you had to change the case to make it understandable, plausible, that she would have this many times going to the mikveh. So now, if you're already re-engineering the Breita, re-engineer it this way. Taritz Ve'ema, say this. Taritz Ve'ema Ochi. Re-engineer the Breita to say this. Safarti. Ve'enu Dat Kama Safarti. I not only had sightings, but I also counted. And I don't know how many days I counted. Ibimei Da Safarti. Ibimei Ziva Safarti. And I have no idea if I was counting days during my Yimei Nida, or was counting days for my Yimei Ziva. I counted days. I had sightings. I don't know if the sightings were Yimei Ziva, Yimei Nida. I counted. I have no idea if I'm counting my Yimei Nida or my Yimei Ziva. Matbilinota tevat bilot. Then she goes to the mikvah 15 times. Svarti, veni odat, kama svarti, chad yoma miya iafshar delo safra. The Gemara says that answer or that explanation of the Breita is not plausible because you're trying to say now that she needs to go to the mikvah 15 times. If she said she counted, at minimum, she counted one day. That's what it says. Enu dad kama safarti chad yoma miya iafshar delo safra. She had to have counted at least one day. Chas l'ralat vila. You're missing one tvila. Because then, if she had counted it at least one day, but at minimum, it was the first day of her Shivanikim. It can't be that the day she came before us, she had a sighting, and she only begins the Shivanikim the next day, because she already said, I counted one day. So if she counted one day, at minimum, she's gotten one day of Shivanikim. If that's the case, then you don't need eight for Yimei Ziva, you only need seven for Yimei Ziva. So then you have seven for Yimei Nita, seven for Yimei Ziva, you'd only have 14 tvilot. Elaima any odat im safarti im lo safarti. Just add to the problem. Say that she says, I'm not sure if I counted or I didn't count. Or if I did count, I'm not sure how many I counted. So as soon as we enter that extra safek in there, then you have a situation in which she would have to go to the mikveh the first day she shows up before us and 7 days later because maybe she didn't count at all. But the fact that we make her go to the mikveh each day is because she possibly counted the days before she got here. And now we continue to count those days as if they are Sforim Lefaneinu. And now you've taken away the evidence of the fact that that Breita means or demonstrates that you don't need Sforim Lefaneinu. Because now the way that you're creating the Safek, you're adding an additional aspect of the Safek. The same Safek as Rav said, but just adding the additional possibility, which is, I did count. And if you add in that possibility, that's why she has to go to the mikveh each time, because there's a possibility she did count these days until now, and she's just continuing her Shivanikim. That's the case. You have no proof that the Chachamim believe that you don't require Sforim Lefaneinu. And then it's possible that they agree with Rabbi Akiva and do require Sforim Lefaneinu. And that takes away this proof, at least from this Breita, that the Chachamim believe that you don't need Sforim Lefaneinu. If that's the case, then that would be more problematic for Rav, because Rav was suggesting that only Rabbi Akiva says that you need Sforim Lefaneinu. The other Chachamim do not require that. In this instance, we don't have evidence of that anymore, and then that would cast possible aspersions on Rav's position that Rabbi Eliezer would say that even if you didn't count the first day, but only the last day, that that would be classified as Shivanikim, even though you don't have Sforim Lefaneinu. All right, next Mishnah. Hazav ve'azava vanida ve'yoledet v'amitzora shemetu. These are all individuals with high levels of Tumah, Tumah that comes from their body that is discharged or created from their body itself. All these individuals, if they pass away, mitamim b'masa. They have tumat masa, ad shimok habasar, until their flesh decays. The Gemara will ask right away, what do you mean? Every mate has tumat masa. what's unique about these individuals that they have tumat masa. Ovei kochavim shemait, a non-Jew that passes away, tahor militameh. They no longer have any din of tum'ah. Now that's also a little bit strange because non-Jew that dies may not have tumat ohel. That's a machloket Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim as to whether there's tumat ohel by a mate Oved Kochavim. But at least with regards to tumat magan masa, then there is a din of tumat a mate for an Oved Kochavim. So whatever you do to explain the first part of the Mishnah will also have to cast light, shed light on this part of the Mishnah as well. Beit Shammai omrim kol hanashim meitot nidot. Beit Shammai says that any woman who passes away, we assume that she has a din of nida. That means that anything that she came into contact with prior to her death has a din of nida, and we'll have to take it to the mikveh. Beit Hillel omrim a nida ela shemeita nida. If she was a nida going into death, then she has a din of a nida going into death. If she didn't have, she wasn't a nida, we don't assume automatically that she was a nida. We'll discuss Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel later. The Gemara now is going to discuss the first part of the Mishnah. In the first part of the Mishnah, we said, Mai b'masa. What does it mean that you're tamei tumat masa? Ilema b'masa mamash. Literally, tumat masa. If you carry the mate, then you have tumat masa. Atu kol mate mi lo mitamei b'masa. As we pointed out, you don't have to be a mate with these types of tumah to have tumat masa. You could have that just being a regular mate. Any mate has tumat masa. You carry a mate, you have tumah that's associated with carrying with tumat a mate. It's nothing about these. Elamai masa, even misma. It's talking about a specific type of tumah. From here, it seems like that even misma is a derivative of tumat masa, although the Rambam and others think that it's a derivative of mishkav and moshav. So you'll have to reconcile that, and we dealt with that earlier in the Masechta that we discussed back on Daf Nun Hei Amud Aleph. We discussed the Tumah of Evan Misma as to where it derives from or what exactly that Tumah is. Again, just to highlight, Evan Misma is a situation in which you have an extremely heavy stone that wouldn't be able to either be moved or really lifted up. If there are items underneath that stone, and then there is a zav on top of the stone, the items below the stone are tmeim. Or if a person has their hand under that stone or their foot under that stone, and then there's a zav on top of it, they are tmeim. So even though technically you couldn't lift the stone, or there's really not necessarily tumat masa, this is a chumrah that is associated with a zav, zava, nida, and yoledet, and mitzora, that they have tumat even misma, and that is that they can convey tumah even through items that are not really movable or don't really act like tumat masa because you wouldn't lift them up, but it looks like you're masa. It looks like you're carrying the item on top, even though it's really that the item on top is sitting on top of you. And that's maybe why it's called mishkav moshav as well, because of that. Dichtiv, what is the source for this idea of Evan Misma or the name Evan Misma? It comes from the pasuk in Daniel, which says, Vehei ta'it Evan chada, v'sumat alpum guva. And they brought this stone, and they placed it on top of the pit. This is when they throw Daniel into the lion's den. They put a stone on top of the pit that he's thrown into. Obviously, it's a very big stone that nobody could move or could lift off of it. And it calls it a Evan chada v'sumat. And that's the maybe the source for this idea of an Evan misma. And explaining where this misma comes from, it's an Evan sumat. It's an Evan that's placed. It's an Evan that is so heavy that it doesn't move. So that's in terms of the source. My taima. Why is it that these individuals are metameh tumat misma after their death? Now the truth is, once they die, none of these tumot have any meaning. Tumat nida, these other tumot, they're not in force once they pass away. Right? They're not relevant because then they turn from these tumot into tumat amet. So why would you have tumat misma after the person already passed away? Amarav zera shema yitalfa. Because maybe they really just passed out and didn't pass away. Tana mishum Rabbi Eliezer amru. In the name of Rabbi Eliezer, they say the test is ashivaka kreso, until the stomach or the intestines rupture. What they're discussing here is a very big issue, and it has much more halakhic relevance today. We won't get into too much depth with it, which is the determination of death. In their day, it was extremely difficult to determine death because they didn't have the sophisticated equipment or ways to test for the person that passed away. And therefore, they had many instances where a person passed away, and then they came back to life. That's because they never really passed away. They never really were dead. They just showed the symptoms of someone who was dead. They were unresponsive. They seemed like they weren't breathing. It seemed like they did not have any movement. They were not communicating. All the things that would indicate death, but it wasn't really death. It became such a huge problem that at some point they started to bury the dead with a rope down towards their coffin with a bell on top, so that if the person woke up in their coffin and really wasn't dead, that they could ring the bell. And that's actually the source for the expression "saved by the bell." Because you rang the bell and you were then pulled out, or they then exhumed you because you were still alive. And that's what the problem that the Chachamim are discussing over here. Shema Yitalfa is that this person is showing signs of death, yet they're not dead. So what is a definite or definitive sign of death? That's actually mok habasar. Once the skin starts to decay, that's a clear indication of death, because that means that there's no longer any blood flow. The person isn't alive, and that's why they're starting to decompose. Or the Rabbi Eliezer says that it's ad shivaka kreso. If the stomach ruptures in a case where you don't have refrigeration, there's heat, and you have a mate there, then in all likelihood, then the stomach or the areas of the intestines will rupture, and that's a clear indication of death. So they're looking for signs of death that are absolute. And that's what they're saying here. The reason we are gozer tuma on meitim with regards to eben misma for individuals who are tmeim, like zav, zavah, nida, yuledet, mitzora, is because there are instances where they are still alive. We think they are dead. We treat them like they're dead, and therefore we don't assume there's tumat eben misma. But in reality, we find out afterwards that they really were alive, and tumat misma was applicable. So the Chachamim gozer tumat misma even after death for these individuals, because of the possibility that they're really not dead, and therefore they will be mixed up with situations or problems with situations where they really just passed out and were not dead. Now, this then opens the possibility that maybe we shouldn't bury people until you have these signs of death. The Aruch Lanier tries to explain that this is only true for people who are slightly away from the mate. They're not adjacent to the mate. Then they suppose the person's dead even though they're really alive. People who are actually touching the mate and involved with the mate would know whether the mate was dead or not. That's a big assumption, because the truth is that that wasn't the case. Even people who handled the mate team were not sure. So much so that, again, they put into law in a number of places that you weren't allowed to bury a person until 3 days after they passed away, which obviously came into contradiction with Jewish law, where we try to bury as fast as possible. And there's a tshuva at Chatam Sofer about this issue of waiting 3 days before the burial, and that Jews can't wait. And then how do we determine death to be sure that we're not burying someone's alive? And so there the Chatam Sofer gives some of those qualifications. And that's part of the debate today about what's classified as death: is brain stem death or respiratory death, the determination of death for the individuals. All of this comes from part of this issue here, which is how do you determine when someone is actually dead versus just in a coma or fainted or something's happened that is simulating death, but they're not really dead. Okay, Oved Kochavim Shemet. So now, with regards to the Oved Kochavim that passed away, Tanya, Amar Rav Yimi, Pnei Mamru, Oved Kochavim Shemet Tahor, Milutamei B'masa. Why is it that Oved Kochavim who passes away, that he no longer has Tumat Masa? So here you get the explanation, which is the fact that a Oved Kochavim is mitamei b'chayav, kizav, is an institution of the Chachamim that we saw earlier in the Masechta. Only in Masechta we said that a woman who's a non-Jew, or a man who's a non-Jew, even though they don't have any shaykhut to the dinei nida, dinei ziva, nevertheless, we make them like zavin and zavot, that they have a din of a zav and a zavah, and they're mitameh like a zav and a zavah. As we saw back then, that was all a din dirabonon. So whatever Yekiva says, that while they're alive, the whole din is a din dirabonon. So after they pass away, we're not going to have an institution on top of an institution, or a gzeirah b'gzeirah. By Jews, where the tuma during their lifetime is midoraita, then the Chachamim instituted after death that tuma persists because of the gzeira of Shema Yitalfa. On the other hand, by a goy, where the whole tumah, while they're alive, is only midrabanan, that they're deemed to be a zav or a zavah, It's only an institution mid the Rabbanan. Then, after death, we're not going to then say Gzeirah, Shema Yitalfa, to continue that Tumah even after death. And that's what the next line in the Mishnah means, that the Ove Kuchamim doesn't have this Tumat Masa, quote unquote, which means Tumat Misma, which they do have when they're alive, mid the Rabbanan. After they pass away, they no longer have it, mid the Rabbanan. Tan Rabbanan, Shnei Masar Dvarim, Shalua Anshei Alexandria, et Rabbi Yeshua ben Chinina or ben Chananya. So they sent these 12 issues to him. Gimel Divrei Chuchma, 3 of them were issues of wisdom. Rashi over here says that Chuchma means halacha, that these were issues of halacha. Others say that obviously these were Divrei Chuchma because you can see that they understood halacha and they were sending questions of relevance. Or it could be Divrei Chuchma as opposed to Divrei Starim, which means that these were halachic issues of Chuchma, Chumata Galui, meaning that halachic issues are not Chumata Nistar, Kabbalistic issues. Gimel Divrei Haggadah, 3 things that were agadot, issues of agadot. Gimel Divrei Burot, 3 things, as Rashi says, Burot means things that were unintelligent, or Shtut, things that have no meaning at all. And Gimel Divrei Derech Eretz, and 3 things that have to do with proper conduct or etiquette. Gimel Divrei Chuchma, here are the 3 things that were halakhic questions. We're going to go through 2 of the 3 today, and we'll continue tomorrow with the remainder of all of these. Azav v'azava v'nidava yoledet v'amitzurashim meitu ad matai mitamim v'masa. We know that there's this gzeret chachamim that says that they are mitamei v'masa even after death, masa being even misma. How long is that true for? Amlen ad shiyumoka basar. The answer to that is that we can determine absolute death and no longer have to worry about shema yitalfa once the body begins to decay. And therefore, there's no longer any worry about the possibility of Shema Yitalfa, and the Gzeret Chachamim falls away at that point because it's no longer relevant. Bat Mishulechet Mahi LeKohen, a daughter of a woman who was sent away, what is her status for a Kohen? This is speaking about a woman who was divorced from her husband, married another party, then left that other party either because he passed away or because she divorced that other party, and returns to her original husband. The Torah says you're not allowed to take back a divorced woman who has married someone else. So she goes back to her original husband, which is illegal, improper, and has a child, a daughter. That daughter that is born is she psula lekuhuna. And the question was the following. Mi amrinan kal v'chomer. Do we say it's a kal v'chomer? Ma almana lekohen gadol. A widow who is precluded from marrying a kohen gadol. Sheni sura shaveh bakol. Her Isur only applies to a Kohen Gadol. It doesn't apply to a Kohen Gadol. It doesn't apply to Israel. Nevertheless, Benapagum, the child that she bears from that relationship is a Chalal. It's a Kohen who's not even a Kohen. She is Mechulelet. And on top of that, this child that she bears from that relationship is also Mechulal and is not a Kohen. And if she's a daughter, she's Psula the Kuna. Zo, she Isura Shaveh Bakol. Over here, a divorcee who marries someone else and then returns to her original husband, which is an issue that applies to a Kohen Gadol, Kohen Ejot, and to Israel. It applies to everyone. And Udin Shibinapagum, then certainly her offspring should be problematic to marry into the Kuna. Odilma, or maybe you would think this way. Ma Almanah the Kohen Gadol, she atzma mitchalelet. The Almanah the Kohen Gadol, where not only is the child born by her in this relationship problematic, she herself becomes a chalala. And if she divorces from this Kohen Gadol, or if Kohen Gadol passes away, she will not be able to return to her father's house to get truma, and she will not be able to marry any other Kohen. So you see that she's affected by it, not just her child. So maybe because she's affected, therefore her child is affected. Whereas by the case of the woman who is a divorcee, who obviously is restricted from marrying a Kohen because she was divorced, but nevertheless, she doesn't have a din of a chlala, and if she is a bat Kohen, she would be muteret to go back to her father's house and eat truma. So maybe over there, her child would not be psula the kuhuna. So he answers them, Amar lehen, he toeva bein banei toavim. The Torah says, with regards to a mafzir gushnato, that he toeva hi. It is a toeva. And there the Gemara is Midayek, Toeva hi. She, the woman who does this, is a Toeva, But her offspring are not toivot. Never her offspring are muteret lekuna. So even though the marriage was an illicit marriage because it was a machzir grushato, which is improper according to the Torah, nevertheless, the only person that is considered to be a toiva is her. Her children are not toivot, and therefore they are mutarim lekuna. Tosfot asks over here, if you already undermined the Kal Vachomer, why do you need a specific pasuk? So he gives one of two possibilities, either because by the case of the Machzir Grushato, it uses the term Tuma, which is a phraseology that we find by Arayot as well, and maybe you would have thought, even without the Kal Vachomer, it should simulate the effect of Arayot producing a product that is problematic because of the usage of the term Tuma, and that's what the Hitoei Vavein Vainaya Tuavim comes to preclude. Or the possibility, as Tosafot on the previous Amud suggests, that there might be a possibility of learning from Almanah the Kohen Gadol in a combination with other psulei arayot or marriages like a Ovid Kochavim or an Eved and an Isha, that the product might be Mamzer. Tosafot on the previous Amud suggested that you could create a Matzad, but that would make it that over here too, the offspring would be problematic. So he says that the Pasuk comes to dispel that possibility, at least according to Rabbi Yehuda, who could entertain such a matzad. And Tosafot discusses why the Kal Vachomer itself doesn't make this woman asura lachzor lebeit avia for truma, because we don't learn from Yisrei Kuhuna to regular Yisreim in the Torah in terms of being posel the Isha herself. And therefore the Kal Vachomer is not enough to make her asura v'truma, and therefore since she isn't asura, that also then undermines the Kal Vachomer to the child, because she's differentiated then from the almana. Okay, we're going to stop here on the top of the first line on the top of Ayin Amud Aleph.